ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीर्वुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्टिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 70, entitled Lord Krishna's Daily Activities, Text Number 42. Tasmin Deva Kratuvare Bhavantam Vaisuradayah Didrikshavas Sameshyanti Rajanascha Yashasvinah तस्मिन् देव क्रतुवरे भवन्तं वैसुरादयः दिदृक्षवः समेष्यन्ति राजानश्च यशस्विनः। तस्मिन् देव क्रतुवरे भवन्तं वैसुरादयः दिदृक्षवः समेष्यन्ति राजानश्च यशस्विनः। तस्मिन् देव क्रतुवरे भवन्तं वैसुरादयः दिदृक्षवः समेष्यन्ति तस्मिन् देव क्रतुवरे माताजी word-to-word translation, Tasmin, in that, Deva, O Lord, Kratu, of sacrifices, Vare, best, Bhavantam, you, Vai, indeed, Sura, demigods, Adayaha, and other exalted personalities, Didrikshavaha, eager to see, Sameshyanti, will all come, Rajanaha, kings, cha, also, Yashasvinaha, glorious. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. O Lord, exalted demigods and glorious kings, eager to see you, will all come to that best of sacrifices. Purport. The Acharyas explain that Narada here means to say that since all the great personalities will come, especially to see Lord Krishna, he should also come to that sacrifice. Om Ajnanate Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namavo Mishnupadaya Krishna Prishnaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Pashati Deshatarine Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vranda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So we are reading from this chapter Lord Krishna's daily activities. So in this chapter, this chapter began with a description of Krishna's activities in Dwaraka. In fact, the previous chapter also, Krishna's different activities at Dwaraka were mentioned. This chapter also continued the same thing. And then this chapter describes that how when Krishna had entered the Sudharma assembly, and one day a messenger came to the Sudharma assembly, and that messenger was sent by the kings who were captured by Jarasandha. So Jarasandha, he wanted to perform a human sacrifice in which he wanted to offer thousands of kings. I remember, I think 60,000 or 1 lakh, some number was mentioned. So he wanted to give Narabali, he wanted to perform human sacrifice to please Lord Shiva. So he had captured many of the kings, and those kings who were captured by Jarasandha, finding no means to get out of the clutches of Jarasandha, they sent a message somehow through a messenger to Lord Krishna. And there were various verses which describes the message which was given by those messenger, some 4 or 5 verses which contain the prayers offered by those kings. Their petition was actually described. And then when Krishna heard the message, at the same time, Narada Muni arrives in the Sudharma assembly. And Narada Muni arrives and he comes with another message. And he says, when Narada Muni comes, immediately Krishna asks that, can you please tell about the Pandavas? What are their plans? What are their desires? Krishna just asked that Narada Muni. And Narada Muni also, he also has a message from the Pandavas. So Narada Muni gives the message that Yudhishthira Maharaj is desiring to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. And the Pandavas are actually desiring your presence. They want you to actually attend the Rajasuya sacrifice. And in this, in this particular verse, Narada Muni is telling to Krishna that in that Rajasuya sacrifice, many demigods are also going to come in order to wanting to take your darshan. So you should not simply give your approval for performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, but you should actually, we request you to personally come there, so that all the demigods and everyone can actually take your darshan and get your blessings. So this is the particular scene which we are discussing. So here, of course, I'm sure in the future classes, the devotees will describe about what actually Krishna is going to do first. But in today's class, I want to discuss about. So here we see that two requests were being made to Krishna. One is from the kings who are actually under the captive of Jarasandha, and another is from the Pandavas. So in the case of the kings, they were actually they were in great distress. In fact, like they were going to be killed by Jarasandha. Jarasandha wanted to actually offer them as a sacrifice to the Lord Shiva. So they were, they gave this, they sent a message because of their great suffering and distress which they were undergoing. And in the case of the Pandavas, according to the previous verse, it's explained that Yudhishthira Maharaj was Parameshti Kama. Parameshti Kama means Yudhishthira Maharaj was desiring the opulence of Lord Brahma. So that is one of the meaning. So Yudhishthira Maharaj, he was performing the Rajasuya sacrifice in order to, because he was desiring the opulence of Lord Brahma. But the Acharyas, they actually give the another meaning of the word Parameshti Kama. Parameshti Kama means, Parameshti also refers to Lord Krishna. So that means Yudhishthira Maharaj was desiring the association of Lord Krishna in order to worship Krishna and to get his blessings. So Prabhupada actually writes that in the Krishna book, that Prabhupada says that that how Yudhishthira Maharaj was basically desiring the association of Lord Krishna. So externally it appears that the kings under the captive of Jarasandha, they were in the category of Artha. They were coming to Krishna because of the distress. And externally it appears that according to the one meaning of the word Parameshti Kama, the Pandavas were desiring the opulence of Maharaj Yudhishthir, desiring the opulence of Lord Brahma, so therefore they were performing the Rajasya sacrifice and they want Krishna's presence. So talking about this, different kinds of people who come to Krishna, in the Bhagavad Gita it's explained that Artho Jigyashur Artharthi Jnani Cha Bharatarshabha. The four kinds of people come to Krishna. Those who are in distress, those who are seeking some material wealth, those who are inquisitive, and one who is actually searching after Krishna, Jnani. But although Krishna says that out of these four people, the Jnani is the topmost. Tesham Jnani Nitya Yukta Eka Bhaktir Visheshyate. Because the Jnani is actually, Jnani does not have any material motivation to come to Krishna. But although Krishna is glorifying the Jnani as the best person, but still Krishna says that Udara Sarva Yevaite Jnani Tvatmaiva Mematam. He says that all these people, all these four kinds of people are magnanimous. All these four kinds of people are magnanimous. Now, usually, when a beggar is asking some money from a rich man, and a rich man actually gives some money to the beggar, and usually the beggar glorifies the rich man as, oh, you are so magnanimous. But we never hear the rich man glorifying the beggar as magnanimous. But Krishna is saying, Udara Sarva Yevete, all these people are magnanimous. In fact, some of the acharyas, they give the meaning, why Krishna is calling all of them as magnanimous, because first, one of the reason is that Krishna feels that these people are magnanimous in offering their love to me. They are magnanimous because they are, although in one sense the Artha and Artharthi, those who are coming to Krishna in order to get relief from the distress or to get some material gain, they only have some short-term goal. But still, Krishna is considering that, oh, these people are magnanimous in offering their love to me. And another reason why Krishna is calling them as Udara is that Vedanta Desika is saying that Krishna feels that these people, by coming to me, they have given me the title Udara. Because these people, by coming to me and giving me an opportunity to give something to them, they have given me the title Udara, magnanimous. Now, I will give that title back to them. Because they have given me the title, so now it is under my possession. So now, I will give the title back to them. So I will call them as Udara. And another meaning he gives, very beautiful meaning, he says, why all these people are magnanimous? Because anybody who receives something from Krishna, he becomes such a rich person that he will have to start giving. Anybody who receives something from Krishna, he becomes such a rich person, he actually starts giving. So therefore he becomes a udara. Like in the Dhruvamara section, Dhruva Maharaj, he comes under the category of Artharthi, in the sense, he actually desired to get a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma, so therefore, he performed a devotional service. But after getting the darshan of Krishna, he only desired pure devotional service, and he became so charitable. Prabhupada writes in one purport in the fourth canto that Dhruva Maharaj practically emptied his treasury by giving charity to so many people. He became so magnanimous because of the wealth of Krishna consciousness which he received from the Lord. So we may see this from another point of view. So as I mentioned that Yudhishthira Maharaj, although from the meaning of the word Parameshti Kama, it may mean that he was desiring the opulence of Lord Brahma, but actually he was desiring the association of Krishna. He wanted to worship Krishna. And even in the case of these kings who are under the captive of Jarasandha, although externally they are approaching Krishna in order to get relief from the distress, but in one sense they are also actually pure devotees. In fact, we'll see that the next to next chapter, the kings and the captive of Jarasandha, they offer such beautiful prayers filled with devotion. So they are also actually pure devotees. And even in this chapter also, if you read the previous verses, the kings, they are offering very devotional prayers. They are also great devotees of the Lord. So when Rupa Goswami gives a definition of pure devotional service, he uses the word Anya Abhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadi Anavritam Anukulyena Krishnanashilanam Bhakti Ruttama. The three primary characteristics of pure devotional service are: devotional service is for Krishna and it should be rendered in a favorable attitude, and it should be performed under the guidance of the superiors, under the guidance of the previous acharyas and one's personal spiritual master, as Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Devotion. Or Anushilanam also means that it should be performed continuously. And the secondary characteristics of devotional service are: devotional service should be free from any ulterior motives, Anya Abhilashita Shunyam, and it should not be covered by Jnana and Karma. So especially these secondary characteristics, they distinguish ordinary devotional service from pure devotional service. So if the primary characteristics are there, that means it becomes, if a person is rendering devotional service to Krishna in a favorable mood, under the guidance of superiors, but with some material motives, then it is ordinary devotional service because he is having some other motives. But when a person also has the secondary characteristics, that means like when a person does not have any other desire apart from the desire to please Krishna, and also when the devotional service is not covered by Jnana and Karma, then it becomes actually pure devotional service. Anyway, what I want to mention here is that why Rupa Goswami uses the word Anya Abhilashita Shunyam? He could have used the word Sarva Abhilasha Shunyam. Sarva Abhilasha Shunyam. Abhilasha means desire. Shunyam means devoid of the desires. Sarva Abhilasha Shunyam means devoid of all kinds of desires. So why did Rupa Goswami not use the word Sarva Abhilasha Shunyam? Because it would give the meaning that one cannot have any desire. That means it would exclude even the desire to please Krishna. So the acharyas give the understanding, if he had used the word Sarva Abhilasha Shunyam, it would lead to ativyapti dosha. That means over extension of the meaning. So, in devotional service, we should have a desire to please Krishna. If we had used the word sarva abhilasha shunyam, even the desire to please Krishna will also be excluded. So we see that how Rupa Goswami has chosen each and every word in this verse very carefully. So he has not used the word sarva abhilasha shunyam because it would lead to ativyapti dosha, over extension of the meaning. And also, Rupa Goswami did not use the word anya abhilasha shunyam. In fact, he has used it as anya abhilashita shunyam. Sometimes, although it may seem technical, but if you carefully understand, we can appreciate Shri Rupa Goswami's definition. So, sometimes one may think that Rupa Goswami has used the word anya abhilashita, that extra letter ta, it is just to make the verse sound in a very rhyming manner. So sometimes, like when a person is writing some poem, in order to make the poem appear in a very rhyming manner, we add some extra words. So one may think like Rupa Goswami has added that letter just to make it appear rhyming. No, actually there is an important difference between using the word anya abhilasha shunyam and anya abhilashita shunyam. So one reason is that by using the word anya abhilashita shunyam, Rupa Goswami is allowing the desire for self-preservation. The desire for self-preservation will not exclude the person from being a pure devotee. It means like sometimes when a devotee is in a very dangerous condition, when a devotee is in a met with an accident or something, he prays to Krishna that, oh please save me. So in one sense he is praying for himself, but that's a desire for self-preservation. But that desire for sometimes a devotee will express his desire for self-preservation in certain extreme circumstances, in certain very difficult circumstances. But just because he is desiring self-preservation, that does not actually, make him actually a mixed devotee. So by using the word anya abhilashita shunyam, Rupa Goswami is giving room for the desire for self-preservation in extraordinary difficult circumstances. If we had used the word anya abhilasha shunyam, then even in the extreme dangerous situation, if a person cannot desire self-preservation. In that sense, Rupa Goswami is, by using the word anya abhilashita shunyam, is very practical about actually the definition of pure devotional service. And another reason why Rupa Goswami has used the word anya abhilashita shunyam and not anya abhilasha shunyam is that Rupa Goswami wanted to relieve the pure devotees, like, basically in one sense the same point, to relieve the pure devotees like Draupadi, Mother Uttara, from falling into the category of mixed devotees. Like, for example, Draupadi, like just before coming to the point of Draupadi, Prabhupada writes a very beautiful purport in regards to the same point in the Gajendra's prayers. Ekantino yasyana kanchanartham vanchanti evai bhagavat prapanna ati adbutam tacharitam sumangalam gayanta ananda samudramagna. So Gajendra is saying, Gajendra is glorifying the pure devotees. Ekantino yasyana kanchanartham. The pure devotees of the Lord, they do not desire anything material. Vanchanti evai bhagavat prapanna, because they are completely surrendered unto you. And then he says, ati adbutam tacharitam sumangalam. Such pure devotees, they are sumangalam means auspicious. Ati adbutam tacharitam. The auspicious activities, tacharitam. Ati adbutam. Ati adbutam means the auspicious and astonishing activities. Gayanta, they are always chanting the auspicious, astonishing activities of yours. Gayanta ananda samudra magna. In this way, they are immersed in the ocean of happiness. Ananda samudra magna. They are immersed in an ocean of happiness by chanting your auspicious, astonishing activities of yours. So Prabhupada writes a very beautiful purport. You may refer to that purport. So Prabhupada says that pure devotees, they never desire anything material. But sometimes, in an emergency situation, in an extraordinary situation, a devotee may ask the Supreme Lord may express the desire for self-preservation just like Gajendra is asking to protect him from the clutches of crocodile. And then Prabhupada says, but even when a pure devotee is expressing his desire for self-preservation, even in that desire for self-preservation also there is a regret. So we can just appreciate they actually what the standard of pure devotional service. He says that although when a devotee is expressing his desire for self-preservation, that does not exclude the devotee from being a pure devotee. But from the point of view of that devotee, so Prabhupada says that even in expressing the desire for self-preservation, even in that also there is a regret. So for example, in the case of Draupadi, Draupadi, when she was being disrobed by Dushasan, so she she sought Krishna's protection. So when she sought Krishna's protection, in one sense it is a desire for self-preservation. So basically what Prabhupada writes in the purport is that sometimes because of a certain circumstances, a devotee may exhibit his desire for self-preservation. So that is called a circumstantial nature. But his original nature is never to ask anything material from Krishna. So we should not judge a devotee based on one's circumstantial nature. One should judge a devotee based on his overall nature of taking shelter of Krishna with a desire to please Krishna. So similarly, we should not judge a demon based on his circumstantial nature. So sometimes during the earthquake happened in the Gujarat. So neighboring country, they also sent relief to India. Their actual nature is to always promote terrorism in India. But the circumstantial nature is that to give some relief. Or sometimes some politicians, just before the election, they visit some Banki Bihari temple that comes in the news, or Tirupati temple or something. Their original nature is maybe very demoniac, but the circumstantial nature is to go to temple during certain this one. So we cannot judge a person based on a circumstantial nature. So Prabhupada says that the desire for self-preservation is a circumstantial nature. So Draupadi expressed a desire for self-preservation. And but in the case of Draupadi, if you see her original nature, she always only desired to please Krishna. As one devotee was explaining, in the Rajasya sacrifice, I don't know from where the source, but I heard in a class, Rajasya sacrifice, that the sari which the Draupadi was supposed to wear, it would take 6 months to make that sari. By chanting different mantras, it would take 6 months to make that sari. And if that sari gets torn, then again that sari has to be made again. And until that time, the sacrifice has to be postponed. So, but that Draupadi, when Krishna's toe was hurt, when blood was coming out, and Draupadi, without consideration of anything, she actually tore that sari and tried to actually help Krishna. So, that is the nature of Draupadi. Her normal nature is to always to serve Krishna, to please Krishna. But in that assembly of the Kurus, she actually expressed her desire for self-preservation, and that does not exclude her from being a pure devotee. And even in that desire for self-preservation, if we see deeply, there is only a desire to maintain the reputation of Krishna. Draupadi was thinking, I am being known as a devotee of Krishna, and if I am not protected, then Krishna's reputation will go. Krishna will be known as that person who does not take care of his devotees. So I have to maintain the reputation of Krishna. So in order to, even in the desire for self-preservation, there is the desire to maintain the reputation of Krishna. So in that sense, when we read that prayers of these kings of who were held captive by Jarasandha, although in one sense they were seeking protection from Krishna, in one of the verses the king say that you are a person who are known to actually establish religion and kill the demons. Sad anugrahaya, I think there's a verse, kala. You are supposed to establish religion and you are supposed to actually kill all the demonic forces. And we are astonished that how is it that this demon Jarasandha is flourishing although you are present. In one sense, they are expressing that if you don't come and kill Jarasandha, then your reputation for establishing religion and killing the demon, that will be spoiled. So that is, in one sense, inherent motivation of these kings. So even in the desire for self-preservation, there is a desire to maintain the reputation of Krishna. But that is the primary thing. And in fact, from Krishna's point of view, when Draupadi expressed that appeal, I was hearing one of the Sri Vaishnava devotees' classes. Why did actually Krishna not come to protect Draupadi? So Krishna was thinking, when Krishna was actually more angry with the Pandavas than with the Kauravas. Because the Kauravas, they were known to be demoniac. But the Pandavas, they are actually his very dear devotees, and they were not doing anything to protect Draupadi. So Krishna was more angry with the Pandavas. Krishna felt that if I come there, then I would actually punish the Pandavas for not protecting Draupadi. When Queen Kunti is saying that Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshanat Asat Sabaya Vanavasa Krichata. So that the assembly of the Kurus is called as Asat Sabha, because except for Draupadi, everybody in that assembly was practicing adharma in that assembly. So in the case of the Kauravas, they were practicing adharma in the sense they were trying to disrobe a chaste lady. So that is one aspect of adharma, not doing dharma, something against the dharmic principles. But another aspect of adharma is that when a person becomes absorbed in the isolated dharma, when a person becomes absorbed in some isolated dharma, when a person becomes absorbed in a temporary identity, and when a person does not practice integral dharma, that is also actually adharma. And this kind of adharma was practiced by the Pandavas. Because the Pandavas, they were absorbed in their temporary identity as a Kshatriya and as a husband of Draupadi. And they felt, oh, because we kept Draupadi as a bet, and because we have lost Draupadi, so therefore we can't do anything when they were trying to disrobe. So they were more absorbed in the temporary identity as the husband of Draupadi as a Kshatriya, and they did not they forgot that actually Draupadi is a devotee of Krishna. And how can we tolerate when a devotee is being offended, when a devotee is being insulted by others? They did not actually perform that the highest dharma of actually protecting Krishna's devotee. In that sense, so the Pandavas' mistake, they also practice adharma in the sense that they were absorbed in their temporary identity, they were absorbed in the isolated dharma and not practice in integrated dharma. So therefore, the whole assembly of the Kurus is called as Asat Sabha. So Krishna, in one sense, Krishna wanted to punish the Pandavas also. But Krishna did not come personally because Krishna felt that if I come there, I would have to actually punish the Pandavas also. So let me protect Draupadi by not coming there. So Krishna felt that because Draupadi chanted my name, then I have to protect that name emanated from her tongue, and the tongue is connected to her neck. And in that neck, actually, her Mangalya Sutra is actually hanging. And I have to protect the Mangalya Sutra. That means I have to protect the Pandavas, the husbands of Draupadi. So just because the Pandavas were related to Draupadi, so Krishna actually, Krishna did not punish the Pandavas also. So in that sense, we see that, anyway, Draupadi was exhibiting that circumstantial nature. In that she was expressing a desire for self-preservation. So even here these kings, although externally they appear to be artha, but they were actually expressing the desire for self-preservation. And the Yudhishthira Maharaj, although externally it appears that he was desiring the opulence of the Lord Brahma, but he was, he actually wanted to please Krishna and worship Krishna. And I just want to mention few points about yesterday's Gopashtami. So Gopashtami, yesterday was Gopashtami, is the day when Krishna actually took charge of the cows. So Krishna was earlier taking care of the cows, but on the day of Gopashtami he took charge of the cows. So when Mother Yashoda saw that Krishna was ready to take charge of the cows, Mother Yashoda told Krishna that why are you so adamant in taking charge of the cows? We have got so many servants who have never left go even one cow astray. They have always taken care of all the cows perfectly. They always protected all the cows. We have got so many servants to take care of the cows. Why are you so adamant in taking care of the cows yourself? So then Krishna tells in response, Krishna says that we are actually Vaishyas by nature. As Vaishyas, we have to do our caste duty of protecting the cows. And only by following our caste duties as the Vaishyas minutely, then our purity of our occupation will be maintained. So then Mother Yashoda says, but this forest of Vrindavan is filled with so many thorns and pebbles, and your feet is like the soft like the leaves of a crimson flower, and I cannot tolerate your feet getting hurt by the thorns and pebbles, and moreover there will be a intense scorching heat from the sun. How will you be able to tolerate that? Then Krishna says in response, actually, you are not aware of this. In the Vrindavan forest, the forest of Vrindavan, all the chamari deers, they sweep the forest of Vrindavan. Because of that, all the sharp pebbles, etc., they have become a nice powder. And the trees of Vrindavan, they pour their nice honey into the pathways of Vrindavan forest. So therefore, when you walk on that forest, you get a very nice sensation. and the Nabi deer, they scent the pathways of Vrindavan with a nice scent. So therefore it is a very pleasurable experience walking the pathways of Vrindavan. And there are very nice shading trees, and Yamuna is moistening the path of Vrindavan with a nice spray of water. So therefore you don't have to be worried that I will get some problem. So in this particular, it's a very simple pastime, but there are many beautiful lessons. One lesson is that we can see that when a person grows old, one is expected to take some responsibilities, or one is expected to increase one's responsibilities. So previously Krishna was taking care of the cows, and when he grew, he actually started taking care of the cows. And then another lesson we can see is that one of the qualities of Krishna, which is mentioned by Mother Earth in the first canto, 16th chapter, is that tapasya. So tapasya, so that the acharyas give the beautiful meaning. Tapasya means one who sticks to one's swadharma. So Krishna, whatever role he actually takes up in this world, he executes the occupational duty of that particular role perfectly. So Krishna had actually taken up the role of a Vaishya. Therefore he is saying that only by following our duties of a Vaishya, by taking care of the cows, we can properly maintain the purity of our occupation. So therefore Krishna was not even ready to wear the shoes. Krishna told the Mother Yashoda, if you want me to wear the shoes, then you have to make the shoes for all the 9 lakh cows. So Krishna, another lesson is that how Krishna was actually sticking to his swadharma. And another lesson we can see in this pastime is that, in fact, when the Krishna desired to herd the cows, there was a meeting which was organized between all the animals and the Vrajavasis. So all the Vrajavasis and the animals, they came together and they unanimously decided that none of us will ever step on the footprints of Krishna. So it is said, Sanatana Goswami says, the real ornament of Vrindavan forest is the footprints of Krishna. Then all the Vrajavasis, although they had such an intimate love with Krishna, but still, even in that intimacy, there is a respect. That means, they were careful not to step on the footprints of Krishna. None of the Vrajavasis considered Krishna to be the Supreme Lord. So they had an intimate love towards Krishna, but even in that intimacy, there is a respect. They wanted to preserve the footprints of Krishna. And of course, another point from this pastime is that how Krishna's love towards the cows. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. So Krishna is known as the protector of the Brahmanas and the cows. And Prabhupada writes in one purport in the 10th canto, he says that the protection of the Brahmanas is secondary, and protection of the cows is actually the primary. That's what Krishna considers to be his primary duty. Because the cows are actually more helpless compared to the Brahmanas. And just talking about this, nowadays there is so much of news about beef eating. Sometimes people say that, oh, cow is just like any other animal. No, cow is not any other animal. In fact, Prabhupada explains in one purport that cow is the most offenseless of all the animals. Because which animal in this world, which animal in this world produces its dung and urine which can be used for good purposes? Is there any animal whose dung and urine can also be used for something? Actually, dung and urine are something which is the waste. When a person passes stool, he doesn't want to look towards that direction. That is the case with all the animals. But even the cow dung and cow urine it's even scientifically proven that they have such antiseptic properties. So cow is not just like any other animal, it is a very special animal. And we can see the Kali Yuga is actually in the first canto, the sages of Naimisharanya, when they heard this incident that of Parikshit Maharaj only punished Kali, who was actually torturing the bull and the cow, they asked the question, why did Parikshit Maharaj only punish this person who was torturing the cow and the bull? Why did he not kill them? I mean, like, they were so surprised that why that person was only given punishment and not killed. So now we can see that how people are surprised that how a person who is actually somebody who is killing the cows or eating the meat, why should he be punished? Like they become so much surprised by that. So we can see the contrast in the culture. Kalau nashta drisham yesha. So Kali Yuga is like a blind, is like an island which is only filled with blind people. Kali Yuga is like an island which is only filled with blind people who are blind to the spiritual culture and who are blind to the essence of the spiritual culture. So even the demons in the previous age, Ravana and Duryodhan, they knew the benefits and the prosperity which arises from the cows. But the demons in Kali Yuga, they are not only aware of the essence of the spiritual culture, they also do not know the benefits of following the spiritual culture in the form of protecting the cows. Of course, if you want to know more in detail, I think some months back, Shamanan Prabhu wrote a beautiful article in the BTG on beef ban. So there's some four myths about beef ban. Maybe you can refer to that article. And just last point about the grazing. Like, I remember that in my whole childhood, my father would always say that if you don't study properly, that you'll have to only graze the cows. That is so actual. Of course, at least in South India, they used to say, they'll say that you'll be only fit for grazing the cows and the bulls. But actually, as read Prabhupada's purports, it is a completely, like, that means it was portrayed that grazing the cows is something inferior to the modern education. That's what my father was saying. But actually, when you read Prabhupada's purport, this one purport in the 8th canto, 6th chapter, 12th verse. So in this world, we see that when a person is practicing devotional service, one of the difficulties is that a devotee finds it difficult to maintain the steadiness in devotional service. Sometimes a person chants some rounds and then some less rounds, sometimes more rounds, sometimes we have difficulty following the different principles. Especially to practice devotional service with determination, most people have the difficulty. And what is the reason why devotees are not able to practice devotional service with determination or with steadiness? So that is related to the lifestyle. So Prabhupada quotes this verse, Yesham Twantagatam Papam Jananam Punya Karmanam Te Dvandva Moha Nirmukta Bhajante Mam Dridavrata. Of course, one meaning is that what Prabhupada says, the meaning in that verse is that Bhajante Mam Dridavrata. A person can practice devotional service with determination when Yesham Twantagatam Papam. When a person has completely eradicated the sins. But what Prabhupada says is that when a person's lifestyle is sinless, then a person can practice devotional service with determination. And then he says, what are the examples of sinless lifestyle? So then he says, cow protection and agriculture, they are examples of sinless occupation. So externally, you are portrayed that, oh, if you don't study properly, you have to only graze the cows. But actually, if you deeply see, if you try to go deep, that how industrial this one, it is so much, it's connected with so many sins. But cow protection is actually, it's practically sinless occupation. So, in Kali Yuga, what is something good that is portrayed as bad, and what is bad is portrayed as good. Like, for example, just the practical aspects of grazing, because we see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna taking the cows for grazing. So, and he had gone to Gokuldam, in Belgaum, one devotee was sharing, that when the cows are taken for grazing, the cows actually pass the dung in the grazing in the different lands. As soon as the cows pass the dung, then the earthworms from the bottom, they would immediately come up in order to actually eat the cow dung. And when the earthworms come from the bottom, and that would make the earth very porous. And the earth is made porous, and when the rains fall, then the rainwater would actually go inside the earth. And by that, the water table of the earth would rise up. So in that sense, the grazing land would maintain the water table of the whole village. So that is why, traditionally speaking, in all the villages, there would be a certain amount of land which would be actually preserved for grazing. And because when the industrialization started, all the grazing lands which are meant for the cows, they were actually given for the industrialization. In that sense, industrialization is actually indirectly connected with the cow slaughter. So when the grazing land would be there, the maintenance cost of the cows would go down. And when the cows are taken for grazing, they would also actually have good health. And because the grazing lands were taken away by the government for the industrialization, so then people practically find it difficult to actually maintain the cows. They become helpless. They had to actually sell the cows. So in that sense, there is a saying which I had heard that one Chandala woman was cooking crow flesh on a human skull. And she was covering that pot with a lid. So one person asked the Chandal woman that you are already cooking something abominable. You are cooking some crow flesh on a human skull. And why are you covering? And she said that I heard that nearby there is a person who has taken away the grazing land. He is roaming around. And if his eyes fall on this food, it would get more contaminated. So I don't want to actually wanted to protect. So basically, the point is that even Krishna taking the cows for grazing, it also has many practical implications in the form of actually maintaining the water table, etc. But in Kali Yuga, because of lack of support, the government, we try to do whatever we can, but we can see that there is a deep science behind cow protection and taking the cows for grazing. So I'll stop here. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.